welcome back, everybody, to the Movie Palace. I'm your host, Carl Sweeney, and thanks for joining me again this week. Bit of a different podcast this week. Thought it was time for a nice change of pace. So I'll explain what we're going to do in a moment, but I'm joined today by Rosie Powell. Hi, Rosie.
Hello.
How's it going, Rosie? How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. Thanks for having me back. How are you?
Yeah, really good. It's a pleasure. It's been a while, I think, in podcast time. It's not been that long since you've been on the podcast, because the Barbara Stanwyck episode went out fairly recently. Yeah. But in like actual life, it's been a while since we spoke, isn't it? Because that was a few months ago. So yeah, nice to talk to you.
Yeah,
cool. So we're going to do what's known as the hashtag classic movie tag challenge this week. So just let me explain. So this is a set of prompts, 10 prompts. They were devised by friend of the podcast, Raquel Stetcher. So if you go to Raquel's blog, which is Out of the Past, Out of the Past blog, or go to her YouTube channel, she's done a video about this too. You can learn more about, you know, what she had in mind. But, you know, people have been doing this online. And I was talking to Raquel, and she suggested it would make a good podcast episode. And I agreed. I thought it was a nice idea, make for a nice change of pace. So Rosie and I are going to talk through these prompts today. So if you want to join us, listeners, after you've heard the podcast, like, there's no time limit, I don't think, on this challenge. So you can do it whenever you want. But I think Raquel just was hoping people would tag her in or give her a shout out. If people are posting on Twitter and things like that. So yeah, if you could do that, that would be awesome. So yeah, Rosie, just before we start, so yeah, we had these 10 prompts. So how did you prepare? Did you have some that you struggled with? Did it fill you with like existential dread like it did me? Some of these things? Or what? How was it?
No, definitely did. No. The first question I really struggled with. Some of the other questions towards the end, such as the craziest thing you've done because of your passion for classic movies. Yeah, I haven't done anything crazy. I'm not that kind of person, unfortunately. So, but very good set of questions. Very interesting. Certainly got me thinking. So,
yeah, I have enjoyed the challenge of them because I normally just kind of skate over the stuff on Twitter where people are doing these movie challenges where you post something every day and things, just because my brain doesn't really work that way. But so I've forced myself to engage with these. I feel like I've learned a lot about myself in the process, but let's find out. Okay. So, question one. So we'll go back and forth, and we'll just go through them sequentially. So Raquel's first question was, number one, what's one classic movie that you recommend to people over and over and over again? So what say you, Rosie?
This is the question that really got me, because there isn't just one. The one that immediately came to mind was The Wizard of Oz. Not because I recommend it often, but I'm always surprised by how many people haven't seen it. Mm. And I feel like it's a film that everyone should see at least once because it has everything in it, you know, comedy, drama, bit of horror, the flying monkeys, music, dancing. It kind of covers aspects of almost all film genres. It's a very beautiful film. In many ways, and it's a cultural classic as well as a kind of genre classic. So, yeah, I would say Wizard of Oz, but that's not because I recommend it to people, just because I feel like people need to see it. But what about you?
Yeah, well, before we talk about me, so when you say people haven't seen it, do you mean like people of all ages? Because it seems to me when I talk to my son and stuff like this, that what's slipping away for his generation is the sense of like shared cultural touchstones that we used to have, you know, because I guess, I mean, how old are you, Rosie? Sorry, I don't actually know.
I am 28.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm 32, so not far apart. But when we were growing up, it was changing, but this idea of like limited choice on television and things like that. I feel like us and people older than us grew up watching the same kind of things, and you know, those were the days where you get these TV specials that had massive shared audiences and things like that. But that doesn't really seem to be the case anymore. So is that what you mean? Is it people younger? Or are you just, do you just mean in general?
I actually mean in general. I mean, most people of, say, 40 plus will have seen Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
But there's a fair few amount of people my age who haven't seen it. And whenever it pops up, it's one of those films, you know, where someone says, oh, I've never seen Star Wars or I've never seen Indiana Jones or whatever. And you're like, what? So, yeah. And it's very bizarre. Like, I understand. I grew up on a very different film diet to most people. But you know, I don't expect everyone to have seen The Singing Ringing Tree, for example. But yeah, it's just bizarre. It just seems to be, it's exactly true what you're saying in terms of it is a generational thing. But still, it's all the more reason for us to share these things, I guess.
Most definitely. Well, I found this a tricky question to answer, but for a slightly different reason, because I feel like I don't habitually recommend films to people, or not classic films anyway, because I think I haven't, in real life, you know, I haven't had that many friends who really are into them. And I've just kind of written them off as a lost cause. Like, you know, it's not like I'm trying to sway them by showing them Casablanca. I just think, like, it's not really what they're into. They like football or whatever, so...
That's really sad, though.
maybe I should try harder. And then the thing is, when you go online, everybody seems to have seen everything. You know, if you're talking to people who like classic films, it seems like everybody's kind of immersed in the same kind of things. However, one I have found I do drop into conversation from time to time is a film called Dark Passage from 1947. Have you seen that one?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So for people that haven't seen it, so directed by Delma Daves, starring Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall. And I don't know why, I just sense not enough people have seen it, because it seems to me it's eclipsed by their other on-screen pairings, perhaps. It's not a film I've revisited that much. I think I've only seen it twice, but the reason I like it so much and the reason I do mention it is I just remember it being this very odd, unique thing. So I don't want to go back and watch it again in case I'm wrong. I don't want to kind of sully that impression of it. But the film, it's about a man who's been convicted of murdering his wife. He escapes from prison and he wants to prove his innocence. But the interesting thing is the first part of the film is kind of done from the POV of the main character. So you don't see his face, really. Then he has cosmetic surgery, after which he now looks like Humphrey Bogart. So that's the kind of the selling point as far as I'm concerned. But yeah, anyone who's seen it, let me know. I'm curious as to whether I'm remembering this film as being more interesting than it really is. Yeah, what do you think, Rosie? And if you've seen it, what are your impressions?
Yeah, I mean... I've always taken it to be one of the classic Hump films, but maybe that's just me. I mean, obviously, you know, it does, as you're right, it does get eclipsed by things like Casablanca, but no, I would say it's up there in the top five perhaps of his films.
Okay, so that would be my choice anyway, but as I said, I found this one a tough one to grapple with, actually. So yeah, this one was easier. So number two, what was the last classic film you saw? And what were your thoughts about it? So yeah, what was yours?
Well, the last one I saw was West Side Story the other day, which I posted on Twitter. One of the best musicals ever made. I know a lot of people would disagree, but I absolutely adore it. Always have. It's absolutely perfect in every way. The casting, you got Natalie Wood, Richard Boehmer, Russ Tamblyn, and Rita Moreno. Sondheim and Bernstein collaboration. The lighting, the set design, the camera work, the choreography, the story, it's just everything in it is perfect. And I know, you know, it does kind of get the mick taken out of it because of the songs and because of it being kind of a rehash of Romeo and Juliet, but it's more than that. The story is in equal parts fun, dramatic, romantic, heartbreaking, and very dark because of that whole undertone of racism. It's not even an undertone, is it? It's right there blaringly. So I just think it's a perfectly produced, directed, acted and edited film.
See, I thought West Side Story was pretty much beloved, so I haven't really come across this like the mick taking or people who would disagree with what you say, so that's interesting. So but you obviously have. So
yeah it's just things like, you know, I Feel Pretty in America, kind of people do take the mick out of that, and I have come across quite a lot of people kind of belittling it because of it. It's just a you know, as I said, a rehash of Shakespeare.
Yeah.
It's not original like other musicals, but yeah, everything in it I just love.
Yeah, no, I really like West Side Story too. Excited about the Spielberg remake that's in the works?
Yeah.
Tentative.
We shall see. I mean, part of me is of the opinion that why mess with something that's already so perfect? But I am very intrigued to see what happens. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm fairly relaxed about remakes in general. I think, you know, the original is always going to be there, isn't it?
So. Yes, very true.
Yeah. Well, so the last classic film I saw was last night, and I watched Thoroughly Modern Millie, okay, from 1967. So I was looking, I had a few films that I'd recorded off Film 4 and hadn't got around to, so I chose that one. Have you seen it, Rosie?
I haven't.
Oh, right. So the film, yeah, directed by George Roy Hill, stars Julie Andrews, Mary Tyler Moore, John Gavin, among others. So Carol Channing as well. Music by Elmer Bernstein, set in 1920s New York. So Millie, who's played by Andrews, is looking for a, looking for a wealthy businessman to marry, but she becomes the target of her of a landlady who is selling women into white slavery. So I might be being unfair, but I didn't like this film very much at all. It starts off quite promisingly, but ultimately just seems to me to be indicative of the worst type of like 1960s Hollywood filmmaking to me. So, I mean, I like a lot of the people involved, don't get me wrong, but the problems were, as I saw them, I mean, this was after a few beers, I'll confess. So, the problems were, I think it's quite bloated. So the film's 2 hours, 20 minutes long, and it felt like it could have done with a good trim, basically. It was quite laboured, so you had these long comic scenes that just fell very flat, in my opinion. The film's trying... So it's, yeah, made in the 60s, set in the 1920s. So it's trying to be quite playful in some of the stylistic things it does. So you've got this silent movie style intertitles that it uses. And you get Millie breaking the fourth wall and looking directly at the camera. But it just all comes off as a bit smug and a bit annoying. There are these weird attempts to like make it this big spectacle. So there's this scene in like an exploding firework factory. And it just felt to me like they were trying a bit too hard. I don't know. But, I mean, I could be way off base. Because I had a look this morning at like the general critical reaction to the film. And it seems to have been liked well enough at the time. You know. But do you know what I mean by like the 1960s thing? Because you get this thing, don't you, where the studio system declines. And then it's a while before the kind of new Hollywood comes along to shake things up. Do you know what I mean? Is that kind of in-between period?
Yeah. I wonder if its critical praise is partly because of Julie Andrews. Because she was flavour of the decade.
Yeah, and this is just a few years after, like, Mary Poppins and things. So, yeah, it could well be. But, hey, if there are any fans of thoroughly modern Millie out there, I apologise. Maybe I'll watch it again. I can't imagine so. But, yeah, we'll see. I do like musicals, though. I just want to reiterate, because I said it on the podcast before, but I actually, you know, we've done a few musicals. I like musicals. I'm not one of these people who's dismissive of the genre, but... Perhaps that leads us on to question three, which is, name a classic movie genre you love and one you dislike. So, I mean, I like to think I could watch anything and fairly appraise it. But that said, everyone does their preferences, of course. So, a movie genre you love, Rosie. I can hazard a guess where you're going here, but go for it.
Yeah, three guesses for everyone who knows me. Horror. So, I mean... Again, yeah, I love most... I will sit and watch most genres. I like thrillers, I like screwballs, I like musicals, you know, comedy. But, yeah, you can't beat classic horror, particularly pre-code. But also, you know, I'm saying that I love early Hammer. So, yeah, just everything. The lighting, the makeup.
Yeah, so when did you realise this? Can you remember? Was there a formative experience or... Was it a childhood thing? Was it?
Well, I've always been interested in it. Yeah. My parents have always been kind of like, oh, why have you always, you know, why do you like horror so much? But when you give me books like There's an Awful Lot of Weirdos in the Neighbourhood or, you know, books on Frankenstein and the Mummy and stuff like that, then I'm kind of, you know, I'm going to grow up liking horror. I guess it kind of really came into its own when I was a teenager. So throughout my teen years, I really started to kind of... sink my teeth, no pun intended, into certain horror films. So, yeah, just so much appreciation for everything that goes into the horror genre, and it's just so diverse and exciting in terms of the acting and the rate of it as well, you know, across the different changes and it being a truly international thing. What about you?
Yeah, so I think on the very first episode of the podcast I put out when I was talking with Clara, and I think I talked about Westerns on that episode. So, I mean, I'd stand by everything I said there. But aside from Westerns, I'd also highlight film noir, I think, just because I just feel like these are films that tend to create a very intoxicating world. You know, they've got this distinctive iconography. It's just a genre that's provided a lot of very memorable moments. And I was also thinking about, you know, something that's somewhat unique to classic Hollywood too. So in the, you know, I think of film noir, I think directly of the classic Hollywood era, as opposed to, I don't know, let's say romantic comedies where, yeah, classic Hollywood churned them out and they were great, but you could also readily pluck examples from any other era. Whereas with film noir, I think then you get into things like neo-noir, don't you? And cyber noir or whatever. So that's what I would say. And yeah, really enjoyed last year doing the Noirvember episodes. So definitely we'll be doing something similar this year. So watch this space, listeners. What about dislike them? What would you say for this?
You're going to hate me. Westerns. I'm sorry. I'm okay with modern Westerns. Like Tombstone's great. And I love Westworld, both the TV series and the film. But yeah, other Westerns, I just can't. I'm sorry. I just can't. I just find them all a little bit samey, I guess. Yeah. And there's such a fascination of this period that was really only historically like a decade long. And I just, yeah, John Wayne. And I know it's more than that, you know. And I can sit and appreciate things, you know, like The Magnificent Seven or whatever. But yeah, if someone said, what genre of film do you want to put on? I would not pick Westerns, so... Sorry.
No, it's interesting because you said about the sameness, and I think that's kind of the reason I said I like them so much to Clara originally, which was I just love that you get this like inexhaustible lineup of like saloons and things. And anyway, yeah, no, I understand. I think a lot of people would share that view, actually. You know, I think you're in good company. Well, I've always had a strange ambivalence towards war films. Now, they can be great, so I guess something like Kubrick's Paths of Glory kind of fits into this era, doesn't it? But... Mm-hmm. For some reason, I just associate old war movies, and especially British ones, with like sleepy Sunday afternoons from my childhood, you know, where it was raining and there was nothing to do, but like, you know, granddad had come round, so we'd have to watch whatever's on the TV. So I wonder if it's also related to the limitations of the time. So they often seem quite sanitized, I think, you know, because they can't really show bloodshed and things like that. Or whether it's something else, I don't know. But I just noticed that, like, the only war films I've chosen to cover on the podcast so far haven't been battle films exactly. So we did kind of Duck Soup, which is a bit of a war satire. Casablanca, which is about this weird outpost. And From Here to Eternity, which is with the soldiers, but when they're on the barracks and things. So I probably should rectify that someday, but it's ambivalence rather than dislike, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I suppose with war films, I get where you're coming from. I mean, I know it's not a very popular opinion, but I really don't like Paths of Glory. Mm. I know, I'm sorry. I had to write an essay on it at university once and I just dissed it. But there are some films, you know, I grew up absolutely adoring A Bridge Too Far.
That's the kind of film where that's what I was thinking, sleepy Sunday afternoons. It's that kind of thing where I know I'm being unfair, but I just have this... association that's lingered, you know.
Yeah, well, no, it's true. But where would you place something like A Matter of Life and Death?
Yeah, I like A Matter of Life and Death, yeah.
Because that's technically a war film.
Yeah.
Or The Great Dictator? Would you call that a war film? Would you class that as a...
I would be inclined to lump that in with stuff like Duck Soup, where it's kind of a tangential war film, I think. But yeah, I'm thinking of the sort of the more straight up kind of...
Like The Longest Day or something.
Yes, more like that, yeah.
Yeah, okay, that's fair enough.
It's weird, actually, yeah, because like, my dad was in the army and stuff, so you'd think I would have some kind of interest based on that, but no. okay, so question four. Name a classic movie star with whom you share a birthday or a hometown. So yeah, what is it? Is it a birthday or a hometown link you're going to give us?
A hometown.
Okay, and where is your hometown?
So South London. And the people, well, there's no one actually born in and around my hometown. The only person born in my hometown would be Enid Blyton. She's not anything to do with his movie style.
Still a good one.
Yeah, not bad. So nearby, it would be Peggy Ashcroft, who's in 39 Steps and The Nun Story, and she won an Academy Award for Best Supporting Actress in A Passage to India. I know that's later, but... And she is, so our local theatre, which is currently closed, the Fairfield Halls, made famous in the Terry and June intro. There's part, one of that's called the Ashcroft Theatre, part of it, named after Peggy Ashcroft. So she was born and grew up in around Croydon. Mm-hmm. And Peter Cushing, who I adore, as you know. Yeah. Of course, Peter Cushing of Hammer fame, and also worth mentioning, he portrayed an excellent Winston Smith in an adaptation of 1984 uh-huh. from 1954, and he played Doctor Who in the mid-60s. He was born in Kenley and grew up around here. And Miles Mallison, the comedy character actor who pops up in a lot of Hammer films in the latter part of his career, they were all born and bred around here. So
nice, lots of good connections there.
What about you?
Well, I was born in Bristol, as was Archibald Leach, also known as Cary Grant. So he was born there in 1904. You know, obviously, they do a Cary Grant festival. I think it's biannual. So the next one is late 2020. So I think actually might consider going down to that next time. But yeah, I think there's a bronze statue of Cary Grant by the harbourside in Bristol, and rightly so, of course. My own connection to Bristol, I mean, I was born there. I didn't really spend any time there, so I don't feel any deep affinity with the place. And I think, you know, obviously, Cary Grant was very charming and suave. So the only connection between me and Cary Grant is being born in Bristol, I think. So, yeah. But then, so, yeah, later, though, not quite a classic movie star, but just let me flag this up. So I then went, like I said, my dad was in the army. He was stationed in Germany. So we lived in a place called Hamelin. Mm. Every year we had to perform in the town hall put on a production of the Pied Piper of Hamelin. So I was normally a rat, basically.
Oh.
I did that for a few years, yeah. So it's the story about the guy who plays the pipe who takes all the kids out of the town and stuff. But also turned into I think it was a 1933 Disney short. So this is the classic movie connection of the Pied Piper of Hamelin. I think there's also a 1957 made-for-TV version, which NBC broadcast, and other adaptations too. But yeah, so I lived there. So that's where I kind of... Because I moved around so much, he was always being posted to different places, my dad. So I don't really feel like I have a hometown, if that makes sense. But, yeah, and the birthday thing. So October 26th, Jackie Coogan, who was in The Kid with Chaplin, was born on October 26th. So that's the closest I could find. Okay, so number five. Give a shout out to a friend or family member who shares your love of classic movies. So go for it.
Well, a couple of people. Yeah. Shout out to my parents for nurturing my love of film, and also to my friend Lee, because he listens to all the podcasts. And cool. I enjoy going to the BFI to watch classic films and other stuff with him. So, hello.
Hi, Lee. Yeah, so let me give a shout out to everyone I've met over the last year or so, because I didn't know anyone who was like tweeting about classic films or anything like that until I set up the podcast Twitter account, you know. So that's been a lot of fun. Family member. So my granddad liked classic films. So I wish I'd have taken, in retrospect, he's not alive anymore, but I wish I'd have taken the opportunity to talk more to him about it when he was. But I remember right towards the end of his life, I was like borrowing things like Stagecoach from him on VHS, for instance. And he's one of these people who had like a bunch of different jobs for his life. But he used to tell these stories about being a taxi driver, and told this story about driving Bela Lugosi at one point. And just like looking in the rearview mirror and seeing Lugosi's eyes like staring back at him. And
at least he saw his reflection.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Yeah. And I think Frank Sinatra as well, he talked about. But yeah, it's just a shame I wasn't as interested then as I would have been now. So yeah, I'll shout out to my granddad, who's no longer with us.
I'm sure he's very proud of you now, if he's looking down on you and thinking, yeah.
Listening, yeah, from hopefully they've got podcasts up there.
Yeah.
So number six is name a classic movie star who makes your heart skip a beat or whom you admire greatly. So which tack have you taken with this? Is it someone who makes your heart skip a beat, or is it someone whom you admire?
Who I admire, I would say. I mean, I think I get them into pretty much every podcast I do with you, Carl. But usually William Powell Monoloy, obviously. I picked a few people. So for their wit, beauty and fierce determination to live life on their terms, Monoloy, Carol Lombard and Betty Davis. And for being equally soulful and silly in their roles and their versatility as actors, William Powell and Jimmy Stewart. So there's five people. I can never pick one, sorry.
No, that's okay. So let me just, because when Clara and Kelechi and I talked about All About Eve, so one of the things that came up in discussion was, is it about the people who are playing these characters, or are you just looking at their like acting talents? So what is it for you? Are you interested in like the biographies of movie stars and things like that? Because sounds like you might be, just from some of the conversations we had.
Yeah, no, definitely. Very much want. I'm a person who likes to find out more about the person behind the character. So yeah, no, and definitely, I feel like it portrayed was particularly with Myrna Loy, Carole Lombard, and Bette Davis. Mm-hmm. They were very fiercely independent, both on screen and in their private lives. Yeah. And when you think about all of the people, you know, the treatment of women and stuff in early Hollywood, not all women, obviously, but, you hear the stories of, you know, like how Marilyn Monroe and Judy Garland were treated. It pays to kind of notice those, not only those who kind of suffered at the hands of Hollywood, but also those who stuck two fingers up to them as well. Yeah. Certainly you can see that with Bette Davis anyway. Yeah.
Well, with this question, the first... So I've gone more with the heart skip a beat thing.
Okay.
So the first image that leapt to mind when I saw the prompt was the introduction of Grace Kelly in Rear Window. Do you know the scene I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Can you picture that? Okay. So look, I understand that beauty is ideologically constructed. So yes, we attach as a culture certain values to things like blonde hair, for instance. But nonetheless, I think Grace Kelly was just breathtakingly beautiful, you know. So the scene I'm talking about is where she's arrived at Stuart's apartment. He's asleep, isn't he? You sort of see the shadow loom over him. And then you see this POV close-up where she leans in for a kiss. And that's the close-up I'm thinking of. I think it cuts back to him and then goes back to her again. And it's also the scene where she goes around the apartment, turning on all the lamps, basically lighting the set, you know, as she's talking to him, if I remember correctly. So she's wearing this gorgeous dress and gloves and a necklace and things. And I think when I first saw the film, when I was younger, I just don't think I could understand why Jeff was so fixated on what's going on outside the apartment, you know. And he's got this goddess who's clearly devoted to him. And I don't know, at some point that probably shifted, and I started to think about it more from her perspective. Like, it's quite interesting that she's this kind of socialite figure, the character. You know, presumably she wouldn't be short of, like, male attention. So what exactly is it that's made her so attached to this idea of a relationship with Jeff? But yeah, no, so Grace Kelly in Rear Window was what first came to mind. Do you understand what I mean there?
Absolutely, yeah. It does bring to mind the story that David Niven told. Do you know that story about Grace Kelly?
I'm not sure. Don't know.
I don't want to ruin her for you. No, it was just David Niven was talking to the prince that she later married.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently the prince said to David, "Who is the best person you've ever bedded?" And he went, "Oh, Grace." And then suddenly thought, "Oh, shit." So he then went, "Gracie Fields." And the prince was like, "Okay." But yeah. Because, you know, she had a bit of a reputation. But no, I mean, she was a beautiful woman. She really was. So
I went to see Rear Window at the Electric Cinema in Birmingham last year. So these close-ups I'm talking about of her in the film, so seeing them on just a huge cinema screen, it just kind of reminded me that seeing a big, beautiful face up on the screen, it is a very important, or it's a very pleasurable component of film going, I think. So like I said, I'm aware, you know, beauty's got this ideological component. I think we need to be cognizant of that. But nonetheless, it is still something that we perceive and that we experience. And I kind of want to hold on to that too, if that makes sense, sounds reasonable.
Yeah.
I wanted to list a man as well, in the interest of balance. So I would say I'm like 98% heterosexual. But, you know, just women, superb gender, hats off. Hats off, women. But I'm going to say John Wayne. Now, interesting that you've mentioned him already. But there's a famous quote about Wayne from Jean-Luc Godard, who's a problematic figure in himself. But he said, "How can I hate John Wayne?" Talking about his political inclinations. "How can I hate John Wayne and yet love him tenderly when abruptly he takes Natalie Wood into his arms in the last reel of The Searchers?" So, yeah, that's the kind. I kind of agree with that, but isn't necessarily The Searchers I'm thinking of. I think I talked about this with Clara. So John Wayne in Stagecoach, I think, was a very kind of striking, gorgeous man. John Wayne in Red River is the one I think of as well. That's kind of peak Wayne for me. So I don't know. I can't really articulate why, but I'm not going to get any sympathetic hearing from you, it sounds like. So.
Well, no. I was just thinking, I used to watch The Quiet Man a lot when I was a child. I love Maureen O'Hara, but... Yeah, I mean, No, I can see where you're coming from.
Well, I think what it is. So I think he had an incredible grace about the way he moved, considering he was such a big guy and stuff like this.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big part of it, I think. And I think I think he's still undervalued as a performer by a lot of people. I mean, you'll find plenty of fans of his out there, but I just think he gave some astonishing performances that just belie his kind of reputation as an actor, if you ask me. So, right, number 7. Describe one memorable experience watching a classic movie. Okay, so I'll start on this one. So I went to see Hitchcock's The Birds at St. Paul's Church in Birmingham in 2011. This was a screening in the run-up to Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
It was put on by something, I don't think it's active anymore, but it's called the Jameson Cult Film Club. Jameson, I think, is like whiskey.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So they had transformed the church into like the Bodega Bay Chapel. So I went with a friend, you know, ushered in by candlelight. They had an organist playing like spooky music, and you were able to go around the church, look at the graveyard and stuff like this. They were giving out cocktails, I seem to remember. Yeah, they had people like role playing. I guess volunteers, I don't really know. People who were like running around as like bird attack victims.
Was there anyone with no eyes, like the guy
pecked out, yeah. Well, that kind of thing where they had blood coming off their face and stuff like that, yeah. So that was memorable. I think I seem to remember watching the film, just it was very uncomfortable being sat in the pews, you know, because I actually couldn't wait for the film to end after a certain point just because the seating was so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But the whole experience was memorable. Yeah, so what about you?
I don't really have a memorable experience watching a classic movie. I mean, I have snapshots of childhood memories when, like, with films that made an impression on me, like when I went to see It's a Wonderful Life as a child, a small independent cinema yeah. in Croydon, and sitting and watching all the Road to films, like Road to Morocco and, yeah. and Road to Zanzibar, with my nan and my mum, and my nan used to sing along to them. But I would say one thing that sticks out for me that's kind of related to this question is, so the first time I visited the Deutsche Kinemathek, the Museum for Film and Fernsehen in Berlin, mm-hmm. It's the film museum in Potsdamer Platz. And I visited, I think the first time was 2007. And it's just my entire, I was obsessed with the 1920s at that point. I kind of modelled myself on Louise Brooks and just was absolutely just in it.
Yeah.
And I just felt like I'd found my spiritual home. Because have you ever been there, out of interest?
No, I haven't.
Well, I would recommend it if you ever find yourself in Berlin. It's my favourite museum anyway, like full stop, because the interpretation's fantastic. But you just go in and there's just kind of, they've mirrored this kind of corridor with all of these images of bits from black and white films. And then you suddenly hit kind of the early filmmaking process in Germany and the Cabinet of Dr. Caligari sets, and then it goes through round into kind of Louise Brooks and then Marlene Dietrich, and you've got all of Marlene's makeup and costumes, and I get so excited even just thinking about it. It is just breathtaking. It is superb. And then it goes on, you know, you have like Metropolis, and it goes through to the wartime films and you know, propaganda. And how, obviously, a great amount of Jewish filmmakers went to America and kind of goes on from there. But, yeah, walking into that mirrored corridor and seeing everything that I loved suddenly in one room was amazing. I think someone took a photo of me at the time. I think, because I was just so, I looked like a kid in a candy store. Just because, you know, I hadn't anyone really to... I was very kind of singular in my obsession with the 20s at that age. So, yeah, suddenly being confronted with all of this exciting stuff, I was just, yeah, blew my mind.
Awesome. No, that sounds really cool. Okay, so I also struggled with... You mentioned this earlier. Describe the craziest thing you've done because of your passion for classic movies. So how did you answer the question in the end?
It's not crazy, but when I was a teenager again, so when I was obsessed with the 20s, I went into a charity shop And I found like this large, long film strip style photo holder with 6x4 images of classic female film stars in it. Yeah. And I was like, that's a great idea. So I wanted to buy it, obviously. And I took it to the counter to pay. And the chap behind it, he was looking at me and he kind of went all smug. He was like, I'll knock off £5. I don't know if charity shops can do that, but he said, I'll knock off £5 if you can name all these actresses, thinking, oh yeah, this girl won't be able to. So then I just...
reeled them off.
Yeah, took great pleasure in listing them off and watching his jaw drop. And then he took the £5 off and I walked out the shop very happily.
Good. Well, at least he was a man of his word.
Yes, very true. Very true. So, yeah. What about you?
Right. So in Federico Fellini's film La Dolce Vita from 1960. So if people have seen the film, Anita Ekberg's character goes into the Trevi Fountain in Rome in an evening dress and starts splashing around. And, you know, I think it's quite well known these days that if you try it, you know, and if the police catch you, you'll get a fine, basically. So I haven't done anything like that. I haven't even been to Rome, to be fair. I couldn't think of an answer to this question, to be honest. I feel like I'm a deeply uninteresting individual. But however, one thing I'll say is that sometimes people will look at me as if I'm crazy when I say I've been to see a screening of whatever it is, Rear Window or Casablanca or Double Indemnity. I think some people just don't get it. Like, why would you watch something that's 70 years old? Why would you watch it on TV, let alone go out to a cinema and spend money to see it, you know, when there's all this great newer stuff to see? And I feel like I never quite know what to say, you know, because most of my best mates over the years have mainly been interested in football and just getting drunk. And I've always felt a bit like a weird kind of outlier. And then the thing was, I was a bit of a holdout when it came to social media for a long time. Didn't really want anything to do with it. I think I was on Facebook, but I rarely looked at it. I actively resisted going on Twitter for quite a while. And then I think that started to change around the time my daughter was born and I was looking after her. So I'd be sat with her, like, sleeping on me, not knowing if I'd be able to move for, like, a few hours. So I just gradually started to use my smartphone a bit more. And then it's just, you know, you realise that, okay, you can find people out there who like pretty much anything. I'm not crazy for enjoying the things that I enjoy. There's kind of a tension there. You sort of feel a bit less individual too, in some ways. But yeah, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. For a minute there, I thought you were going to say you put on a dress and reenacted the Anita Ekberg theme. But yeah, no, I completely understand that. I wouldn't have found Clara or you if I hadn't, you know, I met Clara on Instagram, Instagram. So, and she then put me in touch with you. So yeah, you've got to thank social media for something.
No, I mean, that's... I've met tons of people, or I've got to know tons of people that I would never most likely have come into contact with. Yeah, which is interesting, because I remember like being a kid, you think your friends are going to be your friends forever, but like people drift away and you lose touch with people. But yeah, you can kind of replenish the stock of friends. It's good. I like it. Okay, so number 9. What's something classic movie related that you love to collect? Yeah, so are you a collector?
Not really. I mean, this is another question I kind of struggled with. No, I don't really collect things. I have a fair few film books. Probably the only thing I used to collect was those old screen magazines or song books. So I used to collect them and like look through them all. And then this might be sacrilege to some people, but I would then... cut them up and decoupage things, so collage onto furniture, for example. I spent a lot of time doing a lot of decoupaging of furniture. I haven't had time to do it any time recently, but yeah, I've got a lovely little it was a jewelry box, but I've turned it into a kind of stationery box with Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall on and some kind of music paper, and yeah, Grace Kelly's on the other side.
Oh, send me a picture.
Okay. Yeah, so yeah, what about you?
Well, I think the word collect implies like a systematicness or a level of organization I don't really have. Like I like posters, for instance. I like film posters, but I've never really established a collection of them in the way I'd, you know, sometimes I idly think I would like to. But you know, in my house, so like when you come in the front door, there's a Singing in the Rain poster. It's pretty much the first thing you see, which is nice. I've also got a poster of Vertigo at the top of the stairs, which I feel like is a dad joke that nobody else has picked up on yet.
No, I think it's very good.
Yeah, well, I was happy with it. What about, so I do love to own films on disc, where I must say. So I've got a massive collection of DVDs and Blu-rays, really. I don't know how many in terms of number. But I kind of value having something tangible that you can hold in your hands. I mean, people who follow me on Instagram and stuff will see it's normally the DVD case I post pictures of when a new episode comes out, things like that. But I value the work of like the specialist labels, so things like the Masters of Cinema releases by Eureka or the Criterion Collection, when you have these films presented magnificently, you get these booklets and special features and things. So that's what I like. And I'm also a tiny bit cynical and suspicious about streaming services, I must say. I mean, things like Netflix, I just don't think there's enough variety of choice. I mean, there's endless choice, but if you look for things like classic films, especially Netflix UK is not great, I don't think. A lot of films just won't make it onto new platforms, and they can remove things too easily as well, is the thing. So that's kind of where I'm coming from. But yeah, I think I'm a bit of a, I've already used the word outlier, but I think a lot of people are just happy with the way the convenience of streaming. So I mean, I do understand it, to be fair.
Yeah, I suppose it is convenient, isn't it? But also, yeah, I completely agree with you that there's, it's like when Blu-ray came out and they're like, oh, it's death to the DVD. No, it wasn't. Or when, you know, streaming music and, oh, it's the death to the CD. No, it's not, because people do still buy CDs. So it is nice to have something, you know, and then, you know, if all of the internet and networks went down, at least you still put a DVD in a machine and watch it. So yeah, I mean, I know people who still collect things on VHS and have working VHS players. So yeah, which is something I don't do, but.
Yeah, no, I don't do that, but it probably is a good idea in the sense that a lot of films that were released on VHS never actually made the transition to DVD. And then a lot of the films that were released on DVD, you haven't had a Blu-ray release. And then a lot of those films haven't got onto streaming. So, I can sort of see the value of being a multi-platform cinephile, if that makes sense.
No, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. But although I seem to have slowed down recently, you know, and just you can't keep up is the problem.
No.
In terms of watching them. So there's always like new releases out there that I want. But if I keep buying things, I just don't have the time to watch them. So I'm just being a bit more sparing, which is good because my shelves are kind of creaking under the strain. I'm in admiration. And I think that's one of the things with social media, though, isn't it? You see people who are just watching more films than you and all these things. And it can be a bit, I don't know what the word is. I guess you can feel a bit inferior, if that's the right word. Do you know what I mean? Yeah,
no, definitely. You just, where people get the time, I have no idea. It is amazing. Oh, my other half, this is unrelated, but my other half has just managed to go through 7 series of Game of Thrones in about a month and a half. So we neither of us watched it. I haven't watched it, but because he got all, you know, it was all that hype about Series 8.
Yeah.
So he's done all. He's been watching like 4 episodes a night, and I'm like, what are you doing? I mean, we've done that before with X-Files, but
yeah.
So
fair play to him. Did he enjoy it?
Yeah. I mean, he's coming up to. I think he's finished Series 7 now, so he's just gonna get on with Series 8 now. To be fair, he did have a couple of days off because he's not been very well, so. But yeah, I haven't done that in a long time with something like that. I mean, yeah, we did it together with Breaking Bad and with X-Files, but anyway.
Cool. All right, so we just got one more of these prompts to discuss. So what's your favorite way to share your passion for classic movies, Rosie?
Talking about them.
I wondered if you were going to say drawing, you know, because you've been doing these nice drawings, haven't you? So.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, I do. I enjoy drawing. I wouldn't have actually thought about that at all, because...
Is that more individual as opposed to being about sharing, maybe? Or I don't know.
I don't know why I share them, because I don't necessarily think they're always that good, but I think I'm just... I just enjoy the process of drawing, and I am very rusty, but some of them, yeah, I suppose it's sharing my love of William Powell and Myrna Loy and other people. So, Yeah, I don't know. You've kind of thrown me there now thinking about that.
Sidelined you there. No.
You have.
So talking about them, so you mean like podcasting or you mean just in general?
Just in general. But certainly, you know, through, you know, joining the podcast world through you with Classic Movies and talking to Clara as well. Yeah, it's been great. It's a lovely outlet. It's, as you say, it's that whole finding like-minded people and chatting about stuff that you wouldn't necessarily chat about to friends or colleagues or whatever. And then being able to share the finished product at the end, you know, with people who perhaps don't have a connection with a specific film or haven't seen a specific film. But certainly with the Lady Eve that we did, I bought my parents the DVD so they could watch it.
Oh, nice.
So, because neither of them had seen it and they both enjoyed it. So yeah, it's just, it's important to talk about these things because, you know, if you haven't seen them, then you can go and see them. If they're not around anymore, then you can share. You know, it's just kind of that camaraderie of enjoying the past. Plus, I work in heritage, so I would talk about stuff like that. But anyway, I'm just wittering on now. What about you, Carl?
Yeah, well, I think you're spot on. So, yeah, I'd say, I mean, podcasting in general, talking about them, but podcasting specifically. So it's just a lovely byproduct of doing something like this when sometimes somebody will comment online that they've seen a particular film maybe for the first time or rewatched it for the first time in years, either because it's coming up on the podcast or because they've listened to what we've had to say and been inspired to go and check something out. So that's always a very nice kind of feeling.
Mm.
And, you know, I think also doing episodes about films, it's helped me deepen my appreciation of the films in question too, because I always go off and do a bit of background reading and take notes, and I'll watch things a couple of times on many occasions. So what's nice though is, so that's nice, but then if from time to time that ends up producing the conversation with somebody else that the people who download happen to enjoy, you know, that's just a fantastic feeling. So yeah, that's what I'd say.
Yeah.
So yeah, let me say, so like I said at the outset, so hashtag classic movie tag. Feel free to give us your answers on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram. But as I said, it was Raquel's idea. So go to Out of the Past blog or tag her in on Twitter. And I'm sure she'd love to see that. And yeah, let me say thanks to Raquel for the suggestion as well, because she suggested it would make a nice podcast episode. And yeah, it was a nice, it was a good call, I think. So thanks, Raquel, if you're listening. So Rosie, where can people find you online if they want to hunt you down?
That's not threatening. Yeah. at Rosie the Cat Lady on Twitter and Instagram.
Good stuff. Thanks, Rosie.
Thank you.
Yep, and the podcast is in all the usual places: Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Movie Palace Pod on Twitter, for instance. That's all for today, listeners. I hope you can join me next time when the curtain rises once again at the Movie Palace. If you enjoyed this episode of The Movie Palace and you'd like to support the podcast financially, you can buy me a cup of coffee via the Ko-fi website. Go to ko-fi.com/Carl Sweeney. That's ko-fi.com/Carl Sweeney. C-A-R-L-S-W-E-N-E-Y. Thank you.